That's it. Apparently, I'm not allowed to embarrass my children, so there's like three quarters of my sermon gone. I'll have to. Can you just talk amongst yourself? I've got to rewrite it now. Great. That's awesome. All right. How are we doing? Well, welcome to church this morning. So, obviously, one of the core traditions that we have at Christmas time is the giving of gifts. And it's pretty much become synonymous with the Christmas story. And it's really come to symbolize, you know, God's gift to humanity in terms of Jesus. So one of the most famous scriptures we have is John 3:16. And I'll just get Vash to pop it up there. It says, we actually sang about it this morning. So well done, Kate, for picking up on that. Cool. So it says, "For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son." That's pretty cool, eh? Like, in terms of, like, gifts, that's pretty cool. Like, I don't know if somebody came up to me and went, "Did you get me anything for Christmas?" I'm like, "Yep, I got you Joel." If you don't like Joel, I could probably give you Nick. Yeah, true that. So, look, we give our gifts to our family members, and it's really an expression of that relationship that we have with that person. Sometimes we even give gifts to those people we don't really know well out of generosity or goodwill. And a present is really mean. It's meant to bring joy and happiness both to the person who receives the gift but also to the giver. And I love that concept that Rob was talking about last week about God playing the long game. I mean, we bought some of our presents for our kids in like August and we've been sort of sitting on them for about 3 months. We're like, 4 months, you know, like, these are going to be great gifts. Like, you know, they're sitting under the tree now, all ready to go. We've got one day to go. Imagine buying a gift or having a gift, sitting on a gift for like 2,000-3,000 years or probably eternity, really. That'd be a long time, wouldn't it? It'd be like, every day you walk by, I've got a great gift for you. When's it coming? In a little while. So we think about, you know, this gift that God gave. There was plenty of joy at the time. You know, we hear about the angels singing with joy. We hear about the shepherds who ran into Bethlehem to see it all kind of happened. There was Mary and Joseph, obviously, they were pretty excited. Their parents are generally pretty excited when their newborn arrives. Mum probably not quite as excited. I've seen Kate sitting there just going, But generally they're pretty excited. There was the shepherds, there was all that. There was a little drummer boy, I think. No, maybe. Check your theology on that one. But was it, and is it the case with everyone to whom Jesus was given? Is everyone been over the history of time being excited about this gift that God gave Jesus? I would say probably not. Otherwise, this church would be too small. We'd need a church that would fit 40, 45,000 people. It's just not the case, is it? And the Bible was pretty clear about that. And we're going to get into that a little bit. But first, let me tell you a story, not about my children. I'll change the names a little bit to protect the identity. So I'm a father of five children, so I've given out a lot of gifts, all right? So Joel's turning 25, so, you know, a couple times a year for 25 years multiplied by five, that's, you know. So I'm kind of a big deal in the present giving community, all right? I'm not saying I'm up with Santa or anything like that, but in the present giving community, I'm there, all right? I'm on the radar. So I've got some experience, all right? So let me tell you a little bit of a story. So there's two sisters, right? And I've told you, I was going to change their names, so we'll call them Theridan and Blashty. So you won't know who they are. They don't resemble anyone. And it's a little while ago, so they probably won't even remember this. Vash is hiding behind the monitor over there. So we're going to a work Christmas party, and it's at the pool there, and the admin people, they scour the internet and they find these really cool presents and they're age appropriate. So, you know, like it's pretty good. All the kids rock up there going, "I'm going to get a present from Santa. It's going to be pretty good." Anyway, so we're smart parents. We've been to these a few times. So we didn't line up to get the presents off Santa. We just sort of ducked around the side and picked them up and then we sort of got in the car and headed home. So here's the two sisters, not bearing any resemblance to any of my children in any way, shape or form. So they're sitting in the middle seat of the car and we're heading home. Anyway, so the older one, Theridan, she's opened up her present and it's this little black, cheap and cheerful makeup kit. right? Who's seen those little makeup cases, you know, that it's not Chanel, it's not Yves Saint Laurent, it's just like, you know, it's the cheapy stuff. Cheryl's like, that's pretty cool. You know, she's only sort of probably, what was she turning 10? She's not wearing a whole lot of makeup, but, you know, it's like, yeah, that's a pretty cool present. Anyway, so at this stage, Blashty, she's watching all this unfold. She hasn't touched her present. She's just kind of scoping out things. He's like, all right, mental note. I've seen what is coming my way in terms of presents. So she's like, yep, it's my turn. Tension changes. The focus sort of shifts over onto Blashty. She just gets the corner of the wrapper and she just tears it open a little bit. Just enough to reveal what was inside. Vash, you want to show what was inside? For the uninitiated, this is a JoJo, I can't read the other bit, JoJo bow making kit. So that's not a bad present, is it? But I can tell you on the day when Blashty tore the corner off and saw the little bit in the corner and it wasn't a makeup kit, wow. I can tell you Blashty was not impressed. Never mind. I'll get my words out when one. So she didn't even open the rest of the present. She just tore the little corner off, knew exactly what it was, and just put it down on the floor and then stared out the window for the rest of the car ride home. I can tell you, she did not want one of these. She wanted a makeup kit. In fact, so badly that her mother, I don't want to change her name, Kate had to go out and buy a makeup kit during the week just to placate this younger sister in the story, which wasn't one of my children at all. So I can't tell a story about one without telling a story about the other. So some years prior to that, you know, we wake up on Christmas Day, we're excited to open the presents, but, you know, we're good parents, we make them go to church first and then they can come home and open their presents. Parents, anyone do that? Yeah, all the good parents. All the other parents out there said, I'll be quiet there. So we, Kate and I were like, oh, we're really excited. We thought we'd jag the best present. Like, and you know, because they were sort of similar ages and they're both girls, we're like, we'll get them the same present. It's an awesome present. But they'll use it and play it together. And we were like, yeah, like, we're just like really excited for these guys to open their present. And I was like, oh, yeah, we've just been ready to fist bump and like giving each other knowing looks. The girls are going to open the present. Anyway, it turns out Blashty in this case loved the present. Blashty, you want to put it up what it was? It was a little rider pony costume. You put your legs into the back legs of the pony and you've got little shoulder straps and you can put it on and then you can just ride it around. We thought it was a cool gift. And Blashty thought it was a cool gift too. Theridan, on this case, took her a little minute to figure out what it was, and then she just went, yeah, no thanks, and just threw it aside and stormed off. And we were like, did not see that coming. So there was nothing necessarily wrong with either of those presents, right? The JoJo Bow Maker Kit, like, that was the most popular gift that year for that age group. Like, you know, people doing research on that and even the pony costume, they were good gifts, but they didn't have the intended purpose that it was given in. And I think, you know, the Bible kind of describes that a little bit about Jesus as well. God had given this gift with all intents of it revolutionizing the world, the religious system, you know, daily life, all of that sort of stuff. But it didn't necessarily come across as that. And in fact, some people didn't want it. As Pastor Mal said this morning, there was a whole bunch of people who were expecting the Messiah to come in a particular form. And it showed up in something very different. And people couldn't really rationalize that. So we're going to dig into that a little bit. So I'm just going to throw up a few scriptures and we're going to have a bit of a look at what happens when the gift was unwanted. So John 1:1 says, he came to his own and his own people did not receive him. That's pretty ordinary, isn't it? Go back in your hometown, nobody really wants to see you. Imagine you come back from, you know, you've been away studying somewhere or you got a job overseas, you come back, like, hey, I'm home. And they're like, oh, you. You'd feel pretty awesome, wouldn't you? You'd be like, yay, my family just wants me to... Never mind. All right, so moving on, Mark 6:1. So I'm going to paraphrase this a little bit. This is really when Jesus went to his hometown and the disciples followed him. And he goes to church and he starts talking to people. And they were astonished, saying, where did this man get these things? What is the wisdom given to him? How are such mighty works being done by his hands? Is this not the carpenter, the son of Mary and the brother of James and Joseph and Judas and Simon? And are not his sisters here with us? And they took offence at him. So it's not enough that they like rubbished him a little bit. It's like, man, isn't he a carpenter? He's not even a pastor. He hasn't been to Bible college. Well, he probably had it at that stage. But anyway, I'll probably just undermine my point there. But but the familiarity bred a little bit of contempt. And when he was trying to do these things and show them a better way, they actually got offended by that, which was quite interesting. And then it kicks up a bit of a notch. We go into Mark 8:31. Jesus starts like his ministry proper, and then he began to teach them, it says in 31, about the Son of Man and how he must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the scribes and then be killed and after 3 days rise. So now we're getting to the point where it's not just, you know, they're like, Mark, don't bother talking to us. It's like, no, we're going to take this up a little bit. We're going to dial us up a little bit, and we're actually going to, you know, try you in a court, you know, punish you, those sorts of things. So there's three examples about, you know, how Jesus coming and you know, really they didn't really want it. They didn't really receive that gift, even though God had been planning this for a long time. So just picture this. Have you ever received a gift that was quite challenging? One that asked something of you. So we don't mind a jigsaw puzzle in our family. We grab one out and we put it on the table most holidays. We've got one particular one. It's of this young lady playing a piano. And probably, what do you reckon, about a third of it is the black piano. And all of the pieces are black or some shade of black or black or whatever. And we got most of the other puzzle bit done, and then we just got stuck on the piano bit. And we just left it on the table and we walked past it day after day after day. Maybe we'd get one piece in every day, but it just beat us. It challenged us too much, and we just couldn't get it finished. And this is a little bit like God's gift of Jesus. Like, it's a challenging gift, right? On the surface it seems a bit easy, but there's some complexity and some deepness to it, which makes it quite challenging. And one of the consistent themes of Jesus' story is that of change. So you look at some of the stories there, and Jesus represented and he promoted many changes that upset the current mindsets of the time. So in that first example, when he came into his own family or his own town, they were looking at him and going, this can't be God. At the time, God was very distant. Like, you know, Moses went up into the mountain and talked to God. Nobody else did. Like, you know, God didn't get involved in your day-to-day life. God wasn't something or someone who understands humanity. He was up in heaven, right? And he just dished out punishment. He would talk to one, maybe two of the senior people in the community, but not to the average person. And then here's Jesus walking into town going, hey, you know, I'm basically God made flesh. And they're like, no, you're not. You're the son of Mary. There's your brothers over there. You're married to my sister. Oh, I'm married to your sister. I got that right. And that really challenged their mindset. Imagine growing up in a, you know, the next one was around the scribes and the elders. You know, they had thousands of years of church history. God had told them how to do temple worship. You know, they'd build up this whole industry around the worship, and Jesus is just sauntering in there going, no, 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 you can do it easier. You can do it simpler. You don't need all that stuff anymore. And they're like, excuse me? You know, the rabbis would spend their whole lives studying the Bible, the Torah, and learning it by heart. By 12, you have to know the entire first five books of the Bible. Imagine spending your entire life and then somebody just saunters in going, you don't need that anymore. I'd be a little bit offended. Like, I've been to uni and I've studied chemistry and I work in a lab. I can just imagine how it would go down if somebody just waltzed into me, young engineer, just come in there and go, we don't need labs anymore. We don't need you. We're going to do it a different way. And I'll be like, excuse me? I'm a little bit offended by that. And that's, we often criticize them, but that's almost what happened. They're coming in. Jesus came in, was starting attacking or undermining their whole livelihood, their whole industry, the whole church kind of structure. And it's probably not surprising that they didn't really want it first up. And a lot of them still don't want it. So instead of embracing the change to a better way that Jesus was offering a direct access or approach to God, they rejected it outright. So probably a little bit more onto a Christmassy story. Like let's look at the wise men. So the wise men had seen the star. Now they go to Bethlehem, where Herod the king was. And they said, "Where is he who was born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star when it rose and have come to worship him." And then at verse 3, it says, when King Herod, or Herod the king, heard this, he was troubled. So it's that same sort of thing. Herod himself believed that he was the king. Like that was his political position. And he'd actually taken it a bit further. He'd let it get to his head, right? He was like, yeah, I'm the big boss, right? I'm the man, I'm the king, right? And in a lot of those sort of cultures, they were actually, you know, they'd promote themselves as godlike. And when these wise men turn up from the other place going, where's the king? And he was kind of like, it's me. And they're like, no, it's a baby, he was born. And like that just must have messed with Herod, which is why he got so angry. So for many, Jesus represents a direct challenge to some of their core beliefs. And when asked to change a core belief, a lot of people still reject that idea of change. You ask Nick or Rob from a psychological point of view how difficult it is to change a core belief of somebody. It's really difficult, right? Something that they've grown up with and it becomes embedded in the fabric of who they are. And Jesus is really asking them to change that. Like a rabbi or who'd grown up in that system learning how to do all of the things of the old style of worship. And Jesus is going, no, let that go and take up this new thing. Yeah, I don't think so. And even today, there's a lot of people who are still rejecting that idea of change. I hear a lot, like, if I go to church, if I become a Christian, I'll have to change. And therefore, I'm going to reject that. I don't want to change. I'll have to give up something like this habit, this grudge, this trait, this thing. And often our modern mantra is, I am who I am, and you'll just need to accept me as I am. Don't try and change me, just accept me who I am. And the cool thing about Jesus as this gift is he's able to reconcile that acceptance, you know, with the need to change, to become more like himself. So the good news is that he's able to accept you right now as you are and love you even before you change. It says he came even while we were sinners, in our sin, he came. Like he's already been and gone. It's not like, oh, we've got to wait another couple of years before Jesus comes. Like, he's already been and gone. So he's capable of accepting us right here, right now, as we are. And his grace will allow us that time to then change. So that's how those two reconcile. You don't have to kind of, you know, accept and then immediately change. There's a bit of a grace period where, you know, he allows you some time to grow into that and change. And here's the funny thing. I mean, you change anyway. Like, Kate and I talk about this all the time. We're not the people that got married a few years ago. How many years ago, Kate? 26. You'll have trouble remembering how many years we married, Nick. Don't worry about it. It's 2 weeks for him, so that's pretty easy to remember. We're not the same people that got married 26 years ago. We've changed. We've grown up. We've matured. And we've gone a little bit different. So you're going to change anyway. What Jesus is saying is, why not change to a better way? Those changes should be towards a better way of dealing or interacting with God, not through a whole bunch of systems, rules, regulations, but a more direct approach, as Pastor Mel said the morning, a mediator. You can go directly to Jesus and have access to God. You don't have to go through a whole bunch of rigmarole, you know, book an appointment, do this, do that. You know, you can just do it wherever, whenever, however, and you've got direct access to God. That's a better way. But also for us personally, like a better set of morals, a better set of behaviours. You're probably thinking, I'm pretty good as it is. I hear that a lot. Yeah, I'm pretty good. Like, you know, maybe I won't get into the like top tier of heaven. I'll get into like, you know, maybe the first level or maybe the second level. the reality is, like, you know, we can't be good enough to get into heaven. There is a better way, and we do need to change. I didn't certainly pop out as perfect as I was. My mum's here, she can attest to that but my brother and I are a bit of rat bags when we were growing up. I know you're shocked by that. So when that request to change becomes too much, we often then start making excuses about that. I'm not going to read it out, but there's a great example in Luke where, you know, they're talking about this banquet or celebration. And that's often what else happens around Christmas. You have a celebration. Imagine you're doing lunch and you're like, you invite all these people. And they're like, nah, I can't. I've just bought a new Hilux and I've got to go and check on my new Hilux. Or I've just bought a block of land out of Beecher and I've got to go and have a look at it. Right? You'd be a little bit offended by that, wouldn't you? But that's effectively one of the parables that Jesus told in there. And people will make excuses about why they don't want, you know, him as that gift from God. Right, so just quickly wrap up on the bit around the one unwanted gift. I've got a little bit more to do, so that's not a full wrap. Just bear in mind. So sometimes it's not an instant rejection. Like sometimes we readily accept the gift at the outset, but the novelty wears off a bit over time. So we find that the joy diminishes and sometimes something that we initially loved eventually becomes unloved. It's not that we hate it or anything, it's just that, you know, we don't open it up anymore, we don't get it out, we don't use it. And perhaps it's been replaced by something else or put into a cupboard. So just sort of bear that in mind. It's, you know, sometimes there's an instant rejection, but sometimes that rejection takes, you know, it takes the form of a slow dwindling of our affection for that. All right, so we've talked a little bit about why, you know, it's rejected, but I'm going to dig into that a little bit more about maybe it's because we don't really understand it, or some people don't really understand what that gift is or what its purpose of. Can you think of a time when you received a gift that you didn't understand? So I'm going to introduce you to my puppy, Millie. Vash, can you put Millie up? This is Millie asking me this morning to take her for a walk. Well, I was still preparing my message, so I had to kind of knock her down. Look at that face. How can you reject that face? But Millie got two presents this week. So, Vash, you want to throw up the first present? This is a stuffed toy. It's a pink flamingo. You want to throw up the other present? It's been hot, so we bought her a pool, little plunge pool that she can jump in. So all those two presents, she knew what to do with one of them. When she got the pink flamingo, she's like, hey, I know what to do with this. And she immediately started playing with it. She grabbed it by the neck and she shook it around and she did donuts around the lounge room and had a great time. She still loves that thing. Like, it's crazy how much she loves that thing. But the family's out the backyard with the pool and she'd gotten into the pool and she kind of just stood there and she was just looking around going, I don't really get this. Like, what kind of happens now? Like, and she looked really confused. It was a bit of a mystery to her. And I think the New Testament sums this up about Jesus. It says in 1 Timothy 3:16, it says, we confess this mystery of godliness. He was manifest in the flesh. That's about him coming as a baby. Vindicated by the Spirit, seen by angels, proclaimed among the nations, believed on or in the world, taken up in glory. And the Bible mentions this mystery a lot of times. Paul talks about it quite a lot, about this being this mystery. And how does it play out? So look, we look in John 4. Jesus is at the well talking to a lady who's there. She's there to get a drink out of the well. Jesus is there, you know, doing Jesus things. And you'd think sitting there talking to Jesus, it would be a pretty sort of straightforward conversation. Be like, here's Jesus, I'm here, you know. We'd just kind of start, you know, conversing about a whole bunch of things, or, you know, asking for stuff. But, you know, as the conversation unfolds, it becomes apparent that this lady didn't really know who Jesus was. And it says in John 4:10, it says, he replies to her and said, if you knew the gift of God and who it is that is saying to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. Right? So she's there having the conversation. She could have asked anything of Jesus and it could have happened, but she didn't really realize who she was talking to and the power that Jesus kind of had at that moment. So she's just gone, oh, can you give me a drink out of the well? like, I've got a bucket here, but I don't really want to get my nails chipped, so can you... And he's like, you don't understand who you're talking to. Like, you don't get it. You could have asked me for anything. And even the disciples, they'd been with him a number of years, and they still misunderstood him at times. You know, in Acts 1, you know, they asked if he was going to overthrow the Roman government. He'd sort of, you know, died and he'd rose again, and they're like, oh, now must be the time we're going to overthrow the government. And they still didn't understand at that moment. In Luke 9:54, they'd gone into this village, and again, they didn't really receive Jesus, and the disciples were like, you know what, let's call down fire on the whole village. And Jesus is like, we're not about that, eh? And in those moments, like, the disciples still didn't quite get that gift. Like, Jesus had come in to set them free, not to set them on fire. So I think if we can sort of summarise, what is our role in you know, this gift of Jesus? So God has given this gift, and if we have accepted that gift and we know about it, what is our role? And I think it is really to help others understand it. I think Jesus said it quite well in John 8:19. He said to them, therefore, where is your Father? And Jesus answered, or they said to him, where is your Father? And Jesus answered, you know not me, nor my Father. If you knew me, then you would know my Father also. So Jesus really came to help people understand more about the Father. So at that point, they really only knew what had been revealed to the leaders. When Jesus came, he actually demonstrated and showed what the Father was like. So I think that we can actually help by starting or seeking to understand him better. You know, it's simple stuff, but it's pretty hard to educate someone on something you don't really know yourself. So who thinks they're pretty clever? Yeah? Why don't you jump up? EJ, you want to throw me that 2x2 Rubik's Cube?
No, I'm not that type of clever.
Oh, not that type of clever. All right. How about one of you young fellas in the third row there? Yeah, come on up. Come on, let's up. All right. All right, I got a 2x2. That's a little bit easier than a 3x3 or 4x4 or 5x5. What's the biggest one you've got? 5x5. All right. What's your name, young man?
Hugh.
Are you married, Huey?
No.
Okay. Are you single, ladies? Just putting it out there. All right, how long do you reckon it'll take you to solve that? You don't know. All right, I don't want to put any pressure on there, but EJ, can you come up? Bring up your 3x3. All right, to make it a bit of a fair competition, I'm going to get EJ to solve it one-handed. Oh, he's going to get me to scramble it.
Is that sufficiently scrambled, Ethan? Do you want to check that?
Yeah.
Officially scrambled? All right. Okay.
Harry's father. They don't trust me up here. All right. So we're going to have a bit of a competition here. And while they're going, I'm going to have a bit of a talk to you. So pay attention over there, but also listen to what I'm saying. So EJ's going to go one-handed. Huey's going to go 2x2. All right, ready? 1, 2, 3. All right. So we no point me trying to explain how to do a Rubik's Cube because I got no really idea. All right? But I went to a competition with EJ a few years ago, and there's a whole room at Brisbane State High filled with people who really understand the Rubik's Cube. And they were solving these blindfolded. They were solving them one hand. The record was about 5 seconds for a 3x3 cube. And that was there. I witnessed it. It wasn't like, oh, I saw that on the internet. I was there when it happened, so it was real. So EJ's about three quarters of the way through. How are you doing, Hugh? Good? Yeah, good. Does it look closer? Miller. Oh! Yeah, look at that. All right, thanks, guys. So if I gave you a present of a Rubik's Cube, you've got two choices. You can sit there and look at it dumbfounded, or you can actually work out how to solve that thing. And I can tell you, it's not easy. Like, I've seen the little kind of algorithms that EJ has in a binder. Yeah, I don't really make sense of them. Like, there's like R primes and U, there's an R, and he's memorized all that thing and he can solve that thing one-handed. Yeah. What's your best time, Mijo? About 7 seconds? About nine seconds. Modest. About 9 seconds. I couldn't, never mind. So I think our role is to help people understand this gift of God. And to do that, we're going to have to get an understanding of that ourselves. Now, you can be a little bit lazy and defer everyone to the pastor. You might be like, oh, I don't know your answer. You better go and see the pastor or Scott or one of the other, clever people around the church. But I don't believe that was the example that God set, that Jesus set. So Jesus' methodology was about replication. So he came, he trained some disciples, and they trained some more. And then he actually sent a second gift, which was the Holy Spirit. And he said, now what I have inside of me is now possible through you. So you go out and do what I did. You go out and teach people about God. You go out and teach people about a better way. You bring about the change in your community. So if you want a New Year's resolution in a couple of weeks' time, I heard a good one the other day. Kate puts his preaching thing on when you go to bed, and I woke up in the morning and the guy was going, why don't you spend 15 minutes of time learning about God or reading the Bible? Then spend 15 minutes listening to God in prayer or just meditation. And then spend 15 minutes talking to someone else about God. Isn't that an awesome New Year's resolution? You can adjust the times as you like. If you're more spiritual, you can probably go to 4 hours or something like that. I'll just stick with 15 minutes. So if I can get the musos to come up, I'm now wrapping up officially. So one of the other things you can do is portray a life that makes Christianity attractive. In the story about the woman at the well, she talked to Jesus for literally a couple of minutes. And what did she do then? Anyone remember? She ran back to her own family and she said, come and see. I'm really excited about this guy. He told me all about my life. He told me I had a bunch of husbands and this and that and the other. And she was really excited about that. And she wanted to take her whole family back to see Jesus. So my question is, how many people do you cross paths with and they come away excited about life and really interested in what you're interested in about? Yeah, that's good. That should how it be. Like if you're excited by life, people are like, what do you want, champ? Like, why are you different? Why are you're going through some stuff, but you're still okay with this? Like, or you might have had achieved a real success, and you're like, actually, it wasn't all about me. There was lots of people. How can you be so humble at a time like this? And they start asking questions of you about why you're like that. And this is what Jesus was like. He demonstrated these things, and they were like, tell me more. What's going on here? He had this radical goodness. He had this radical power. He had this radical mindset change. And people are like, I want that. I want some more of that. And if you can come into somebody's world and break that open, they're going to be much more accepting of God's gift. Because, there's that old adage about, you might be the only Bible that somebody reads. If you come into their world and you break it open for them, they'll be like, wow. I might just take that gift. I might just accept Jesus for myself. Wouldn't that be awesome? So I'm just going to pray for you right now. So when you're opening some presents tomorrow, I just want you to reflect on what I've sort of said this morning. Not everyone receives the gift that God gave with open arms. Because it's a challenging gift and sometimes it requires something of us. Sometimes we need to change or we should change because we're not where we should be. And we've got some things, some loose edges that need to be trimmed up and sharpened up. So if you haven't yet accepted Jesus, or maybe you're like that one that initially had, but then it sort of become a bit, of a thing that we did back in the 2000s, and it's just kind of sitting off in your cupboard, and we dust it out once a year or twice a year on Easter and Christmas. Maybe you're like that. Maybe it's time to relook at that, and maybe challenge yourself to dig into that a little bit more. And if you're one who is more passionate about Jesus, maybe it's time for you to help others understand what that gift is and how they can find it for themselves. So why don't you stand up? The guys are going to sing in a second, but I'm just going to pray. Dear Heavenly Father, we are just so thankful for your gift of Jesus Christ. You know, if he didn't come, we would still be under the old system where it was very difficult and very structured and you know, quite exhausting. But you have come to show us a better way to access God, but also a better way to be humans and a better way to live amongst ourselves. And I just pray for those that are out there that may not have accepted you or if they've allowed that gift to kind of slide away into, I guess, obscurity. We just pray for them that as they're opening gifts or as they're contemplating Christmas, that they would, you know, there would be a renewed spark for that gift, a new renewed passion. And I just pray for the other group of people who know you and just show us how to be more effective at helping people understand what that gift is, what Jesus is and how he can be of benefit to us. We pray this in the name of Jesus. Amen. All right, I'm going to...